Mary, welcome to Adelaide Chronicles, and thanks very much for doing this interview with me.
Yes, well, thank you for coming here and visiting me. Well, this is my studio. I'm a textile conservator, so I work here restoring and conserving all sorts of textiles. And I also have collected a range of handmade textiles from different parts of the world that I sell. I've been a textile conservator for a long time, and during the work I did, I started discovering that there were still fantastic quality new handmade textiles being made all over the world, and I've tried to bring some of those together so people can enjoy them in Adelaide as well.
So what's a textile conservator?
A textile conservator's role is really to preserve what's left of a historic textile, to stabilise it, to clean it, and to make it useful for display so it can be enjoyed by people, or to be stored safely so it can be kept for future generations. It depends really what the client wants to do with their textile. It's interesting, a lot of people who came here from other countries bought textiles with them because they're an easy thing to bring because they don't break and they can be tucked into small bags. So there's interesting family history all over South Australia, all over Australia with textiles that have been bought here. They're also early historic textiles made here, and then we're a nation of travellers, so people have brought back a lot of interesting things that they might not know what to do with them, how to get them onto the wall, or hats that need a stand, or framing, costume that can be put on display stands or can be hung on the wall.
The name of your business is Fabric of Life, and that's got a beautiful ring to it.
Well, one of the reasons I love textiles is that they are a part of our daily life and we're all familiar with them. We all know what they are. We know how to wear them, how to use them. But some of them either are more special or they develop a special meaning because of their use and importance, in the community. And we all have things like wedding dresses, which signify a rite of passage in our life. We also tend to change the sort of clothes. We might wear a miniskirt when we're 20 that we wouldn't wear when we're 60. So clothes also tell us a bit about who we are and how we fit into the community and society, not just in Australian culture, but all over the world. In some things like the Pakistani dress up there, that fine embroidery shows it was made for a special occasion, for an important time in that girl's life, and it tells the whole community what point of her life she's at.
And how did you learn all that?
I did a history degree at uni. I wanted to be an underwater archaeologist, but I ended up doing a degree in art history, anthropology and fine art in Canberra at ANU. And while I was doing that degree, I discovered that there was such a thing as textile conservation. So in those days, there wasn't very much textile history taught as part of art history courses, but there is now, but not then. And then I went to London and did a 3-year postgraduate course at the Courtauld Institute at London University.
So all of that beautiful work, it all means something?
It all means something. The designs in things, when we see that, I think in Australia we understand Indigenous Australian, First Nations designs. We see them and we think, we know what that is. We may not know what it means, but we know it belongs to that culture. And that's the same in many cultures. People have their stories. Some cultures don't even have a written language, so all of their stories and their creation stories, the stories they pass on through generations, are all done through images and storytelling. So the Miao Chinese embroideries, they're a minority group who live in China. They're very fine, incredibly fine embroideries, and they all tell their creation stories through what they wear. So those panels are made to go on coats, and so people were wearing their story, and they wear different things at different stages of their life, different colours.
Well, that's really interesting. If somebody bought something like that and wore it without understanding the significance of it, would that be disrespectful?
I don't think it would be disrespectful to wear it, but it would be disrespectful to reproduce it and use it. I mean, I think there's a lot of now appropriation of design in fashion and things like that that doesn't always respect the cultures that those designs belong to, and there's more of a movement now to recognise that and to make sure that people are properly acknowledged or spoken with before the textiles are even created. It's something that's in the world of fashion that's a discussion point at the moment.
And there's a bit of a movement too towards resisting through stitching. And yes. Stitch and Resist being one name.
There is. I mean, there's a movement to try and not waste so much and to ensure that people who are working with textiles are being properly paid for that and they're working in decent conditions, that they that we learn not to waste so many clothes, that there's water and transport and all those things that affect the environment that come with the fast fashion trend that we currently have. So I think there's more awareness now, and there are different groups that are helping to change that.
I wonder how many litres of water would go into making a T-shirt.
I don't know, but a lot. Cotton takes a lot of water and often a lot of pesticides as well. It needs to be grown somewhere where the environment could provide that naturally for it.
But if you're buying a T-shirt that's worth that for $10, well, then you can assume that nobody really got adequately paid for it.
Yes, I think that's a fair assumption. I think there's been a bit more recording done of which companies following the supply chain from where the materials come from, where the clothes are made and how they're made, and so that we can find out a bit more now, but there's still a lot more work to do with that. But generally, if things are very cheap, there's a reason. You can't have a $5 T-shirt that someone's been properly paid to make, I don't think.
The amount of work that goes into some of the beautiful hangings that you've got, if people were paid by the hour, it would be worth a fortune, wouldn't it?
Well, I think there's two parts of that. One is that the economy in the countries where they're made are different, so the value is different. So people might be paid less per hour than we are, but things also cost less in the shops than they do here. So it's a different level. But also these things are made to last a lifetime, so they might be expensive, but you only need one.
And you'd have to say by looking at them that they're made with love.
Well, things like this Suzani, it's made as a wedding dowry textile, and often they'll be made but left with one little section unfinished so the next generation can also work on the same textile, so it makes that ongoing connection through the generations.
So it's an ongoing story.
Yes, and it's interesting, particularly in Uzbekistan, because this sort of embroidery was banned during the Soviet era, but it must have kept going because now it's very strong again, and somebody had to remember how to do it.
Underground textiles.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so it was interesting, and now in Uzbekistan there's very fine, incredibly fine, beautiful work still being done, as well as more commercial things, which are cheaper.
And it's recognised.
Yes, recognised as being important, and it's very much a part of daily life. People still wear ikat jackets in the street everywhere, and the embroidered hats. All the little girls we saw going to school all had different embroidered silk hats on.
So do you go to the countries where you buy these?
I did when I
did.
Could.
Sorry, not go.
I have travelled a lot. I've travelled to India, Laos, Cambodia, Vietnam and Uzbekistan, and also to Turkey several times collecting textiles, and it's been wonderful, and China. And one day, and I've also worked with the artist Urnabella here in South Australia with their handmade batiks.
Oh, wow.
I did a lot of work with them over quite a long period.
So how do you link in with them?
I was lucky with India. I went to a conference at the National Gallery a long time ago now, and there was a woman I met there who wanted to start textile tours in India. And she said, do you want to come and I'll just do a practice tour on you and see what you think? Mm. And she was fantastically generous. Her name's Carol Douglas, and she took me and introduced me to artisans who were making different sorts of textiles, and that really got me started. And it was my most amazing experience to see all that work in Gujarat in northwestern India, to strong textile traditions. There are lots of different, there are block printers, there are tie-dyers, there are all sorts of embroiderers. So that was a fantastic trip. So that got me started, and I went back and saw those people again several times.
And you maintain links with them?
Yes, and with social media has a lot of problems, but one of the good things is that you can keep in touch with people in other countries in a very easy way. And I used to send the money with Western Union so it would get to them in their village in Bruges in 20 minutes from the post office here.
And there's a huge element of trust in that, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. And but I think even in India, I was there once and I'd run out of money because I'd been buying lots of textiles for the shop, and I found this beautiful range of textiles, and they said, just take them with you back to Australia and just send me the money when you get home. people are very trusting.
Mm. And talking of India, I bought a card from here that was just beautiful, the Tree of Life, that was a stitched card.
Yes, they're beautiful cards. The Kantha cards are from West Bengal. It's a charity called Javika that main role is to ensure that girls are able to finish their education and not be manoeuvred into early marriages and things. So, and they helped to get to school safely and return to school and to finish their education. And the women who do make those cards embroider at home, because they're a good small-scale thing they can easily do at home. Then they come together and meet as a group and make them up into cards in Calcutta every month or two. And the other embroidered cards come from Gujarat, and those embroideries, I commissioned them to make those, the embroideries that they use on their clothes. But they're such beautiful stitches and beautiful patterns. They're all like little jewel boxes, really glowing with colour, and they look lovely as a little set framed on the wall, as well as being a special message for someone.
And India's in such a perilous state at the moment,
so sad.
Isn't it?
So I recently bought a new collection of Kantha embroidery from West Bengal through a NGO there that works with this same, not the same women who made the cards, but in the similar area to where they live. And every piece is just a masterpiece, really. Completely shawls, they're all silk. Some are silk georgette, some are tussar silk, all completely embroidered all over. Well, I think the way to keep these skills alive is to support the artists who are making them.
Mm.
And I'm only doing it on a very tiny scale, but by buying things and paying properly, that's what keeps these things going.
Did you have any more that you wanted to add?
Tell my Ernabella story, that was quite funny. When I started to work with Ernabella, I've always loved their batik, and I rang them up and said, I've got this new shop, Fabric of Life, in North Adelaide, and I'd like to have an exhibition of your batiks. Would you be interested? And they said, oh, you have to come up and we'll see if we like you. So I thought, oh, well, why not?
Well, if you got them, they must have liked you.
So I went up with my husband and my daughter, who was then 8, and we spent a few days up there. It was just fantastic. We got there, my daughter said, where's the hotel? I said, oh, there's no hotel. And we stayed in the arts centre, which was fantastic, so we had time to sort of go through the paintings and look at everything. And the batiks were just, they're just incredible, beautiful things that they make there. And,
oh, gosh.
And we were able to watch people working. I went back for other trips after that first one. But we worked together for about 10 years till they stopped doing batik there. It was such an enjoyable period. Very clever women.
And I notice you've got the peace dove as a card.
They're also from Calcutta. It's a workshop that's run by disabled people, particularly people who can't speak. It's called Silence, and they hand-print those cards there. So I think some of those cards make nice Christmas cards for us and birthday cards, even though they may not have been initially meant to be that.
I think that's wonderful. I'd love to keep in touch and see how everything progresses and what's happening next.
There's always something different passing through. It's interesting, I've just finished conserving this woolen ship that would have been made by a sailor. And there's an exhibition on at the moment at the David Broche Collection, which has a ship very similar to this one in it, which is textiles from South Australian collections. So it's interesting that this one comes from Melrose. It's interesting, there are two in South Australia. It's Victorian, 1880, something like that.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.